This is The Annex, a sociology podcast. I'm Joe Cohen from the City University of New York, Queens College.
I'm Leslie Hinkson from Georgetown University.
And I'm Gabriel Rossman at University of California and a lot of DayQuil.
Our guest is Cristobal Young from Cornell University.
Hi there.
Hi, Cristobal.
Today, reparations. Our discussion was recorded on Wednesday, April 17th, 2019.
Okay, yeah, so reparations. So the reason why I wanted to talk about reparations is both because it's a notion that's been floating about, in the higher levels of government, in particular, specific wings of the Democratic Party have been basically reintroducing a discussion about reparations, basically to, in some ways, atone for the sins of this country's association with slavery, while at the same time, I am at a university in which the students have just voted to add a $27.20 fee to all incoming students annually in order to build up a fund to pay reparations for the 272 slaves that were sold in order to pay down the university's debt. So got the macrocosm and we've got the microcosm.
Wow. Wait, Georgetown sold slaves to cover its debt?
Yes.
It was before the war.
Yes.
Yeah, I find it interesting in part because, you know, I have my whole big project now is on disreputable exchanges, you know, and this fits pretty well with my pawning model, where they were reluctant to sell these people, but they did so under the duress of debt. I'm no historian of slavery, but my understanding is you can find other cases where estates were broken up and slaves were sold off when the estate became indebted. I believe that's what happened with the Jefferson estate after his presidency, and one reason why he wasn't able to manumit his slaves.
Well, just like kind of like just a point that I want to make about this, Gabriel, is who you mean by they, right? So,
I mean the people that Georgetown owned.
No. Like who was reluctant? So the story.
Yes.
So the history of this goes that the president at the time was met with this debt and he was like, we got to do something about it. So he goes to the Vatican and says, I want to be able to sell these slaves or at least some of them in order to pay down the debt. The Vatican says no, under no circumstances. And then this guy then goes on to actually incur even more debt. And the debt gets to such a point where finally the Vatican relents. And these 272 people are sold. And one of the arguments that Georgetown made was that, oh, we're going to keep families together, right? And we're going to send them to a Catholic state. So they send them to Louisiana, almost all of them to Louisiana, which was arguably one of the hardest places to be a slave at that point in time.
Yeah, it was proverbially the threat to slaves was sell you down the river.
Yeah. So that is the context.
Sell you down the river. Wow.
Yeah. So that's interesting with the issue of the university going into debt, the Vatican refusing to let them sell human beings to discharge the debt, and then them going really into debt, and then the Vatican relenting. Yes. Something similar happened in the Fourth Crusade when the Fourth Crusade went into debt to Venice. And so at the beginning of the Fourth Crusade, they pledged not to attack Christian cities and to always obey the Pope, et cetera, et cetera. And then they went badly into debt to Venice, basically to book, to charter some boats to Jerusalem, and they couldn't afford to pay the debts, and then Venice said, well, why don't you go sack this Croatian Christian town, which obviously the Pope wouldn't want, but they were so badly in debt that they just did it, and then the Pope said, well, you're really badly in debt, so that's okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, so what is so interesting about the whole reparations debate to me, like, you know, regardless of whether or not we're looking at what some, you know, some members of Congress are discussing, whether or not we look at the debate about reparations over time, you know, starting from the 40 acres and a mule, which people frame that as reparations, but I think it was less about reparations and more about we can't just unleash a whole bunch of unlanded people who don't have money and who can't read onto the world.
It was basically a land reform proposal.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta start them up with something, or else they're gonna be charges of the state for forever. Mm. So that's not really reparations, but I kind of feel like the 40 acres and a mule is usually invoked as reparations. So whether we look at it over time, and also whether we look at it like just looking at this one university in which its students are leading this discussion and saying, well, you know, we have these symbolic things that we feel are going on, including the, oh yeah, if any of the descendants apply for admission, we'll give them the same consideration that we give legacies. The students are like, that's all symbolic in our eyes. We want to transform the symbolic into something material. How do we do that? And I think that that's one of the biggest shifts, or one of the biggest, the hardest tasks when we think about the debate about reparations. Like, symbolically speaking, I think a lot of people, not all people, but a lot of people will agree, oh, that was a bad thing. Like, maybe we should do something symbolic to actually acknowledge that was a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. But then the shift from symbolic to material, like, that's where, like, we get all of this friction, which then results in inertia.
Yeah, that's kind of my concern. You know, $25 a student per year. I don't know what the payout's going to be on that, but
$400,000 a year. But again,
for everybody, So it's going to be like $1,000 split among all of those slaves' heirs.
So that depends, because the way in which the students envision it is, we won't give it, we're not giving that money directly to individuals, right? What we will do is we will partner with nonprofit organizations that will be charged with providing services, programs, et cetera, to the descendants. And in that way, I think they think that there's some like greater returns to scale in terms of having a sort of positive impact on people than just simply being like, okay, here's your $15 check.
Yeah, like that's what the math of that seems to work out to me is like you're going to be giving everybody $10 a year. Mm-hmm. And then their descendants each get $3 a year or something like that.
Yeah.
That proposal, I love the idea of an institution openly acknowledging and trying to make amends. Uh-huh. But a $25 fee is a lot lighter than maybe a commitment to like admit underprivileged students of color.
Well, they did that.
No, but really admit
They did that. That was it. That was their initial reaction about a year ago, where they said that as Leslie summarized, that they treat them as legacies for admissions purposes.
Okay, treating as legacy is like you have an increased opportunity to pay the $50,000 a year to show up at Georgetown, as opposed to like if you really want to give something, like bring in a sizable number of people and pay their way.
I may be mistaken, but I thought they were also going to offer them reduced tuition.
So reduced tuition wasn't the same as no tuition. Mm-hmm. And then a conversation ensued, a conversation that should have been had at the very beginning, in which I know I raised this point. I was like, how bad would it look if you actually admitted someone and you're like, oh, that's our grand gesture. And that person whose ancestor was sold in order to pay down your debt then needed to go into debt in order to graduate from your institution, right? That would not be cool. So they're in the process now. Like, I think that's part of their fundraising campaign, is to raise funds to actually provide like either even further reduced tuition or free tuition to the descendants who get in.
You know, this a little bit reminds me of, I remember hearing about how after the Holocaust, the government of Germany gave the state of Israel something like, you know, the equivalent of like $30,000 per victim of the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we lost family in the Holocaust. And it was like, well, thank you, I guess.
Like, yeah, I know, right?
One, 30 grand. Like, okay, that's, I guess, what you value the life at. And like, it's going to like another agency that has nothing to do with me. I mean, obviously, there are people in the Jewish community who would argue that like Israel, you know, provides some measure of safety for Jews or whatever. But like, I don't know, you know, you cut a $30,000 check and then what, you dust your hands off and be like, well, my work here is done. And that's sort of my issue with reparations in general, right? Like, what is it? We're going to give somebody money and then we're going to be like, well, now that's all done. And what's that going to change really? Like, it didn't kill anti-Semitism, that 30 grand per head.
So building on Joe's thought, the way I've thought about reparations since it first came up with Coates, I don't know how long it was, like 5 or 6 years ago, is I think about it in terms of relational models theory. Mm-hmm. You know, the Alan Fiske conception of you can have different types of relationships with people. And one form of them is market pricing, and another form is equality matching and communal sharing and authority ranking. And you know, reparations is putting a price on something. It's saying, you know, we are going to, it's effectively, whether it goes through a court system or not, it's effectively a tort, mm-hmm. you know, and saying like, here was a wrong and we're going to reconcile that with damages, which is something that's really culturally variable. You see some cultures engage in this and some cultures not. You know, as I point out to my undergraduates, the way that cultures treat homicide varies widely, where in the Bible, it talks about homicide as equality matching. You have to take a life for a life, and you can't have a wrongful death suit, whereas in traditional Northern European cultures, the preferred means was a wrongful death suit, that is to say, market pricing. But kind of going with Joe's thing is that market pricing implies a finite duration relationship and or the cessation of relationship. So mm-hmm. for instance, within married couples, we generally don't have contractual relationships within the couple. But as part of a divorce, you always have a divorce settlement mm-hmm. where you say, you know, so-and-so gets to keep the house, but in exchange they get, you know, the retirement accounts or yeah. whatever.
And after that, we're done.
And after that, we're done, you know? And so now that made a certain amount of sense when it was talking about something like the aftermath of Shoah, because as a general rule, the Jews all left Germany mm-hmm. after the war and moved to America or moved to Israel. And so that actually was the cessation. And it was saying, we used to be part of one community. There was a wrong done within the community. Now we are two separate communities, but we would like to be communities of equals with a neutral to effective relationship between communities, but recognizing we're no longer one community.
Right.
And so what kind of gives me the willies about reparations is that it implies a cessation of a relationship because as a general rule, you don't have monetary quantification of damages within a relationship to restore relationships and maintain the relationship. You have them in order to end a relationship on conditions of equality.
Well, maybe it's a way of ending the old relationship so that moving forward, you can have a relationship of equality. Maybe that's one way to think about reparations in this context.
The only thing I was going to say about this is, you know, is Georgetown actually doing anything about this? I thought it was quite humorous that they put out this statement that, like, student referendums do not set university policy, and this is non-binding for us, and we'll make a decision later.
Exactly. That's what's crazy, right? And so, you know, it's like, you know, if universities were subject to, like, sports betting in terms of their administrative decisions and the decisions of boards of trustees, like, basically, we'd be running a pool right now. Like, we all want to know, what's the board going to say? Like, number one, is this going to go to the board? And number two, what is the board going to say, especially in light of the bad press that we've had over the past couple of months, you know, how do you respond to students saying, and basically the way the students who voted yes on this frame this is, this place wouldn't exist for us if it had not been for the sale of those individuals. So we kind of feel like paying $27.20 a year is like nothing, right?
It's a reasonable gesture to
yeah,
help sustain the university in its hard times.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So it's symbolic, right? You know, it's the symbolic thing that they're trying to make material. And, you know, and there are many of us who are basically trying, like, we're trying to guess where the board is going to go. I mean, they're a relative, they're a pretty conservative board. And with that goes this idea that, you know, this idea about reparations is in many ways ridiculous. So regardless of whether or not this would make the university look good, there are many who believe that the Board of Trustees just like on principle alone will say, no, we won't do this, but we'll see.
I'm laughing about it, but you know what? It is a nice gesture. And like, at least there's an open institutional acknowledgement of this.
It's not institutional. It's the students.
Right.
It's the students are the ones who are like, we feel a sense of responsibility here.
You've been listening to The Annex, a sociology podcast. A special thank you to Cristobal Young from Cornell. His book is The Myth of Millionaire Tax Flight, How Place Still Matters for the Rich, with Stanford University Press. We're on the web, sociocast.org/annex, on Twitter at @socianex, and on Facebook, The Annex Sociology Podcast. Our producer is Liseth Moreno. On behalf of Leslie Hinkson and Gabriel Rossman, I'm Joe Cohen. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.